Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. My guest is dear friend Chloe Ariel. Chloe is a clairvoyant, an intuitive, a sensitive. She's had lots of experiences, and as is often the case with such gifted people, at some point they come under the crosshairs of deep black, weird science intel agencies. And on top of that, ET experiences as well. So, Chloe has a lot to unpack. I'm really looking forward to this discussion. So, without any further ado, Chloe, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Hi there, James. Thank you for inviting me. I'm looking forward to it. A bit nervous,
Likewise,
but I'm okay.
you'll be fine. This is just two old friends talking.
Okay.
Well, Chloe, tell us about your upbringing, because as you know, one way to really understand somebody, whether reading a biography or getting to know someone personally, is to find out about their childhood and their upbringing and their teen years, et cetera, going forward. So tell us a bit about what it was like for Chloe growing up.
Gee whiz. It wasn't much of a childhood, very complex. I was birthed into a family, a polygamous family in the 70s, a cult that my father ran in the early 70s to late 70s in going all the way to the 90s in Australia. So I was number 11 of 63 children. My father ran a polygamous cult, so there was actually 10 wives, not 9 wives. And there's a lot there. Gosh, where do you start? So at the age of 3, after growing up in that cult, about 3 or 4, 1981 or 1982, because I was born in 1978. I was taken by my mother. My mother came to back to the cult because she was kicked out of the cult when I was a baby, so I didn't really get to bond with her. So she came back to the cult and collected me. Although I was always told that she was meant to come and get my sister because my mother only had 2 children to my father. And came to get my sister, but got me instead. So then I was taken by train and by bus to the other side of Australia and brought up in a smaller part of the cult, a smaller polygamous cult, by my stepfather, who had 3 wives and 11 children. Yeah.
Just for clarification purposes, is polygamy legal or illegal in Australia?
Oh. You can't marry, you can't have multiple marriages in the system, but if you were just in a cult, my father could say that you're my spiritual wife.
Yeah.
And most of these women were young teenagers that were in the cult. My father started the cult around Hurstville in Sydney. A background with my father was that he and some of this is based on conjecture because we don't actually know the full story, but like a lot of secrets and everything, there's a lot to uncover. But he was a policeman in New Zealand for many years in the 50s. So he was born in 1928. So he was brought up there and he was a police officer in the 50s and 60s. And then apparently, and he did go to the US. So he went to Hawaii and sort of disappeared. No one really knows what he did for about 10 years over in the US. I suspect that he was trained up by the CIA to be a cult leader. Like I think there's a lot of cult leaders like Charles Manson who were actually trained. That's my angle, is that he was, there's no way that this guy, with the knowledge that he had, was not connected. He was definitely a high level Freemason, 33 degree Freemason, and he was trained up by, I don't know which department, I could say CIA, some letter agency trained him up in America to be a cult leader because he used unethical hypnosis on the women. to get them into bed. I mean, you look at my father, he's not a very good looking fellow. I'm sure he used unethical hypnosis to make himself look like the most handsomest man in the whole universe.
We've seen that pattern many times. In fact, I was just talking to someone in the recent past, and they had a similar cult background growing up in as a matter of fact, the next, well, by the time this airs in a couple of weeks, Erickson's interview would have come out. And he likewise grew up in a cult in Santa Barbara, California, which definitely had intelligence connections, military connections. How old were you when you got out of there, when you left?
The larger cult, I was 3 or 4, taken by my mother. And people might think that it was a close relationship with my mother, but it wasn't. And then I grew up in a sort of kind of in society, like going to primary school and stuff, but being in a suburban area. So we had other cult members around us, but it was all like no one really knew that they had a polygamous family thing going on. And we had to lie going to school that they're our, not our half sisters, but our cousins or, that sort of thing. So in some strange way, it was like a saving grace being a part of like school, but not at the same time, obviously.
You reckon that how widespread was this cult throughout Australia?
It wasn't, I don't think in the beginning, in the like 60s and 70s, my father had like he'd just been over to the US and he it was a part of that like 70s movement where he had like great music from Led Zeppelin and Jimi Hendrix and came and had a record shop. So he had a music shop in Sydney. So that's where he got to meet all these young women or teenagers. He was like 45. They were half less than half his age. You know what I mean?
We had a music instrument shop and a record shop.
Yeah, it was a record shop.
Well, that'll bring them in droves.
Absolutely. So, and then he had like, strangely enough, I've got this cat meowing at the door, but that actually makes sense because he actually put a newspaper article in the an article in the paper to say that he had a talking cat and that would you like to meet the cat, right? So people at that time, there's nothing like that going on in Sydney, like anything spiritual and stuff like that. So people heard about this talking cat to come and they visited the shop. So basically he was like fishing for like people who were like open-minded and wanted to like, not join a cult, but who were open-minded enough to believe that, you know what I mean? Not that I think
How
that cats don't talk.
young were the girls that were thus recruited? What was the youngest that you were aware of?
Sorry, lagging a little bit. So yeah, very young, 12, 13. So actually two of the girls in the family were kidnapped from their houses and they were never seen again. So very, very young. But like he definitely had CIA links and like links to Satanism because he was able to sort of he had powers, he was able to use his abilities to like, and it wouldn't be very hard for a 45-year-old man to, manipulate a young teenage girl, if he wanted to. So very, very young. It's a well-known cult. Like in the 90s, people would have seen it on Women's Weekly and it kind of had a big news and media cycle in the 90s and looking at the family that went to Byron Bay, but there's a whole back history of that family, and people what I find is very strange is people not understanding or like asking the questions of like how did this actually start? Who started it? Where did my father get all these ideas from? And my question is who trained him?
Would he have sexual relations with some of these underage girls?
Yes, absolutely. They were his spiritual, quote unquote, wives.
Oh.
So there's this when Jesus Christ Superstar, like Hair, I think it was, or that show came to Sydney in the 70s. He took this young girl who was 13 years old, and he was standing there with his long beard and hair, and everyone looked at him and thought that they were like Jesus and Mary Magdalene. It's unbelievable, you know what I mean?
Did he seem to have like a get out of jail free card, like a
Absolutely.
Teflon Don kind of aspect where he couldn't get arrested, he couldn't be,
Couldn't get
you know.
arrested. Absolutely. Like there's stories of when the family were in Bells Beach in Victoria, that the police would come and he would just say a few things at the front door, a secret handshake or whatever it is, and then they'd go away, you know, because obviously some of the family members were wondering where their kids were, their teenage daughters were. And this talk of my grandparents coming to the property and other parents coming to the property. And back then you could have guns. And so there was one time after they left Sydney when he had his wives, right? He went to Goulburn and ran an army surplus store. So he had, you know, guns and ammunition, and it's just crazy, you know. And these parents are coming, and they're given the, you know, look, we've asked the women, and everyone seems to be there on their own accord, you know. And I think back in the 70s in Australia, they didn't really know what to do with Colts,
There
you
was
know.
no effort to investigate to determine whether or not the girls were there of their own accord or if they were being held against their will. There was none of that.
Well, they apparently investigated, but the police would come to the house and ask the women if they were there on their own accord, and they said yes, because they're under
Oh,
mind
because they were under
control.
my control.
They're under mind control. And my father's using unethical hypnosis, you know, on these young girls, and they're going, I love him so much, you know, see you later. And
Thank
so all the
God.
parents, poor parents, you
Was
know.
there a certain profile he looked for, or just young, impressionable girls?
I think it's just young, impressionable girls. But in saying that, I do wonder about, because I've, you know, put the sort of links together in my mind, that some of these f families were from like, they had like army heroes in their families. And I know that's a really, really, maybe a strange thing to say, but really high survival genes in their DNA. That's the link that I've got from talking to some of the mums and their family lines.
You mean from Vietnam and the Korean War and World War II?
World War II mostly, yeah. So that's the pattern that I've seen, and I don't know how that's linked, but I know it's a link somehow. Is that some of the one of the granddads was did so he was from the UK, right? And so he had so many missions in a Spitfire. And that was really a high like death toll when you go out and you fly
Yes.
those Spitfires. Yeah, he came back after hundreds and hundreds of missions alive, right? My granddad was a POW in Borneo in Kuching, came back. Thousands of men had died, thousands upon thousands of men. Like, he just missed this Sandakan March, Sandakan March. If you don't know the story, they killed thousands of Australian men, the prisoner of war under the Japanese. Yeah. So he just missed that. He was elevated to lieutenant, and he came back 45 kilos. It was an absolute miracle that he survived. So there's that link. There's a link there, and I don't know
Well,
how that links, but I.
as you know, we've determined over time that DID trauma is passed on genetically. So
Yeah.
clearly, like in that example, having just barely missed Sandakan, but had endured all these horrors before that, right,
Yeah.
at the hands of the Japanese,
Yeah.
and in World War II, folks, if you had a choice of being captured by the Germans or the Japanese, you were better
Germans.
off being captured by the Germans, because
Yeah.
if it was the SS, you know, they would just maybe execute you on the spot, like get it over with. But you know, at least you can spend the rest of the war in a German POW camp. Whereas if you were captured by the Japanese, it was going to be hard times. And so he would have developed trauma DID, and
Yeah.
that could potentially have been passed on to his is children and grandchildren.
Definitely. I mean, they're all looking for a father figure too, and like he's cut off emotionally because, they got taught in that time is to not talk about the war. Don't talk about your emotions. I mean, that's still going on to a degree, but there's no real help for veterans. And he went atheist after. So that's the link to the cult too, that he they she grew up my mother grew up in a household devoid of any spirituality or any sort of faith. So because he's an atheist, he doesn't believe that God, there wouldn't be a God, because why would God allow that to happen, is what he said to me, when I did meet him when I was really young.
Your
And
grandfather.
yeah, my granddad, I spoke Japanese to him. I was learning Japanese in high school and
Wow.
I didn't know, and he started speaking Japanese back to me. I was like, "Watashi wa namae wa Chloe desu." And he's like speaking Japanese, and then he told me the story of how he had to, it's a pretty horrific story for a 16-year-old to hear, is that he watched his fellow troops, they had to dig holes in front of them and put their head over the hole, and the Japanese man would, cut the head off
With a
and
samurai sword,
with a samurai sword. It's pretty hectic. Oh my God.
yeah. There was one picture taken of Australian flyers, and they were made to kneel, and there was like a large crowd of Japanese army personnel, and they're watching the spectacle, right? And the Australian flyers have got blindfolds over their faces, and they're about to be beheaded,
Yeah.
and they found a picture of this on the body of a dead Japanese, and thereafter, the Americans found it. The Americans passed that photo hand to hand, until the end of the war, just to make sure people knew that this really happened, right? That
Yeah.
they would behead people.
Yeah. And he saw hundreds of his fellow troops, and they're close, they're mates, and that's, it's traumatizing. Yeah, so that's the household that my mother grew up in. And so you can understand why she's looking for a father figure and someone who's offering all this spiritual guidance. And in the 70s, I think we don't really understand socially, like the climate really, of how that sort of was ripe for cults to flourish,
Yes. Kind of like a counterculture thing. Like, okay, we
Yeah.
gave you old fuddy-duddies a chance, and what you gave us in return were two world wars.
Yeah.
So we're going to try things like our way for a while. Little did they know that that same system that produced those two world wars and innumerable wars in between had set up this whole counterculture movement, right? And
Yeah.
so, yes, because it simultaneously to that, and America, you had the Flower Power movement, the Summer of Love in San Francisco 67 and all that. And meanwhile, the exact same thing was going here in Australia. When
Yeah.
did you begin to realize that you had this intuitive gift? Was that something that you developed over time, like when you felt danger? Because I can imagine there was
Yeah.
some degree of danger in a cult where you had to have your wits about you in order to survive.
Yeah,
Tell us about that.
absolutely. Well, I was the scapegoat of both cults and my sister as well, because my mother left when I was a child, when I was a baby, so I was scapegoated from a very young age. And abused physically, emotionally, sexually, everything. He put the ones that he, the favorite ones that he had for that, underneath the stairs. And it was only when I was 29 that I realized that he had actually abused me as a child, as a toddler. Because the talk in the big family was that, oh no, he never did his own children. It was like some excuse, and there's a lot of memories from a lot of kids that, yeah, he did
This is
actually.
the
They
cult
don't.
leader you're talking about.
My father, the cult leader, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And so yeah, but like I definitely developed telepathy, because when I was a little girl, I used to talk to my father in my mind across the hall when I was like 3 or 4, and I remember it. And I know you don't remember a lot of explicit memory at that age, but I do remember that. And my mother told me when I was a baby, when she did have me for that small amount of time in the hospital, that I used to talk to her in my mind as a telepath, like to bring her a bottle to feed me and to say things. So she was saying that I was a telepath, and I remember my father knowing that as well. So there's definitely a link there to what I have been doing in the last 6 years on my channel. Yeah.
Well, intelligence
Still
seems
there?
to be aware of your intuitive gifts because you've had problems in the past with sustaining podcasts and channels, YouTube channels, what have you, and
Yeah.
also the fact that you are an intuitive, so a lot of information you get downloads and what have you, and there's been some disruption in that process because I've seen this with other people where
Yeah.
when they start to peek out, whether it's through plant medicine, whatever the case may be, their powers start to peak, and then
Yeah.
suddenly, like the Matrix just explodes, and black helicopters,
Yeah.
aliens, demons—I mean, you name it—they get hammered
Yeah.
until their powers go back down to, like a lower level. They got to work their way back up again.
Yeah. Well, the gift was given to me as a child. And I remember hearing voices in my mind telling me that I was about to be set up. I remember this situation at five, that my sister, one of my half sisters, was about to come into the room, and I was sitting there reading a Golden Circle book on my bed. I remember it. And I heard a voice in my head saying, "Hey, you know the little butterfly toy that you have? It's broken, and you're going to be set up, basically." So I was
In other
like,
words,
"Really?
scapegoated for like breaking the toy
Breaking the toy, scapegoated for breaking the
and
toy."
then punished, I guess.
Yeah, but my half sister came in with one of the mums, and I'd already got the toy and hid it somewhere else and went back to reading my Golden Circle book. I think they were trying to save me from a really severe punishment that was going to traumatize me. Because she came into the room in front of the other sisters, and she went exactly to where she had hidden it, because she obviously broke it, and it was right underneath the bed that I was on. And she goes, "And here it is. She did it." And nothing was there. And she kind of looked perplexed, looked at me, and then walked out. So I was like, "Thanks, guys."
They tipped you off.
Yeah, they tipped me off. I'm really glad for that. I do remember that quite vividly, you know.
In total, how many years were you part of this cult?
All my upbringing. So the smaller cult that I grew up in was affiliated with the bigger cult, but my cult leader father wanted all the wives to himself. So originally it had men and women in the cult. But after a time, he's like, "No, I only want my wives." So he sent all the, my stepfather was a part of the cult as well. Like, his two sisters were involved in the cult too. So his two sisters were my father's wives. So he sent them off. So they were all quite mind controlled and programmed, even though we lived in, the other side of Australia in society, where they were still quite brainwashed. And I still, got punishments through my father, because they were still on the phone to my father. Like, every Friday they would talk to my father on the phone. So, it's like an offshoot of the cult, but a sort of annex
Yeah,
of
like an
it.
annex to it. And
Yeah.
they get their guidance, directives, if you will, from your
Yeah.
dad.
Yeah, and he was still telling them to treat me like a scapegoat there too. So I still got all the punishments, and we had some horrible stuff, like, growing up, and in the bigger family, like, we've some wacky things like waterboarding. Like, they
Oh,
make you
jeez.
drown, like near drowning, and then they save you. I remember that quite vividly a few times. And just gone blank, probably because I'm
Well,
talking
that can
about
induce a near-death experience
Yeah, well, it
because,
did.
yeah, because what they did, that idiot John Yoo, who was with the Justice Department in the US,
Yeah.
he came up with this finding that, oh, this is like at the outset of the bogus war on terror,
Yeah.
what some good that did us, but anyway, he wrote this finding that said, ah, nah, waterboarding, it's permissible. It's not going to do any lasting damage to the prisoners and detainees and what have you. But of course, he's never gone through it himself. Because for those who are not familiar, waterboarding, from what I understand, simulates drowning.
Yeah, it
The
does.
person feels like they're actually drowning.
Yeah, and you're in such a panic as it's happening. And you're trying to reach for these apparent caregivers, but they're the ones pushing your head in the water. So.
In the time you were there, did you ever see any unusual personages come and go, like whether they were police people, policemen, or like you said that your father was a high-ranking Freemason. Did
Yeah.
any of his cronies come and go, like businessmen and policemen and things like that?
I can't remember. I was too young to remember that. But from the hypnotherapy that I've had some hypnotherapy. There's this one person that comes and pushes my head under the water, but I can't really verify that. I was too young. Like I'm only 4 years old. I'm not really seeing.
Jeez, that's horrible that you had to go through such things, such an
Yeah.
early age.
Yeah, well, it definitely fractures your mind, and that's the whole point of MK Ultra mind controls. When you're three and you're being sexually abused and waterboarded, you're going to have, fractures and splits in the psyche. So there's alters. So,
And we'll get into this more later on because it kind of segues, is the template, if you will, for these later projects that you were inducted into down the track, and whether that was like elements of Australian slash American intelligence, something was going on where these children that had been previously traumatized in this fashion, later on, somehow, some way, they get inducted into these programs, and it's like a pipeline, right?
Yeah, sorry, we've got a bit of lagging that seems to be going on across every device I'm on lately. So, what was that last part? Sorry.
Well, I was just saying that it seems in some cases with some cults that
Yeah.
are intelligence connected,
Yeah.
it's like a pipeline. So the kids get abused at an early age, and then later down the track in their teens and as a young adult, they get inducted into these weird science programs.
Yeah, well, I didn't have that induction into anything that I recall. Although I've had the MIB or agency people come up to me. But we can go into that, I don't know, later or not.
Yeah, you can really dish it out in
Yeah.
the member segment. Well, take us through your teen years, then going into your young adult years, and then if you feel so
As
inclined,
a teenager,
anything to do with ETs and other types of phenomena that entered into the mix.
oh gosh, I had so many things. When I was 12, I started kind of, I felt like understanding my multidimensional self because I had this thing happen. I went with my mother to this meditation group, and I don't know why she brought me. I think because I started telling her that I was seeing things that weren't there, beings and people, and I think she thought it might help me. She's never she We weren't very close at all. Just let you know that we weren't attached. I still have nothing to do with her now. She's not a very safe person, high narcissistic personality and everything. So anyway, but I went to this meditation group in like 1991, and there was all these people there, and all these people there, and we were meditating, and then as I'm meditating, this big giant personified raven being came out of nowhere. I'm closing my eyes, I'm doing everything they're saying, and this raven being is like screaming at me with wind in front of me. And sorry about this cat in the background that keeps on meowing. I'm gonna have to let him into the room 1 second.
Oh, I can't hear him.
I'm just gonna have to let him in. He's just annoying me. It must be high energy in here. The cat's coming in. So yeah, that's what happened when I was 12, and I feel like that was like kind of like an initiation in a strange way. Sorry. Sorry about this cat. I've got no control.
Oh, it's okay. I mean, I've had Judith Quilba on here, and her cat's always walking around all over the place in front of the camera and everything. So
Must be what we're talking about. Yeah.
was this a bird raven, or was it like a humanoid raven, or?
Humanoid raven. And the thing is, I've had this connection with ravens since 2020, like real big time. I have asked my higher self and what it was about, and they said that it's because I have crow medicine. And
That I
so,
was thinking, yeah.
and I don't really, I mean, I've got a Native American guide, and he said, you have crow medicine. If you could tell me about that, I'd like some understanding. I feel like it's an alchemist, like you're able to shift dark to light, which is what I do in my sessions, I suppose. Yeah, as a shamanic sort of practitioner.
Well, you
But
got the
yeah.
ravens, and
Yeah.
from the ancient Roman perspective, they were kind of a harbinger of, sometimes death or other things, unpleasant things. But also
Yeah.
there was a warrior aspect to the raven as well. And ravens are kind of oversized crows. Now the crows, from the Native American
Yeah.
perspective, from what I understand,
Yeah.
they signify wisdom, cunning. And if you have delved into the Carlos Castaneda
Yes, I have.
books,
Yeah.
yes, in one of
Journey
his
to
ex
Ixalan. It was very good.
That's a
Yeah.
very good one. And also, I forget what book it was, but at the end of the book, he and some of the other initiates jumped off a cliff. Oh, no, I'm getting that mixed up. It was in a previous book.
Yeah.
He took some plant medicine and shapeshifted into a crow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so definitely there's something to that.
Yeah, shapeshifter. I tend to do that sometimes, you know, like as a medium, as I trained as a medium under spiritualism mentor for a while, but I ended up sort of changing. Because the spirits were telling me that I'm a healer, that I need to focus on doing more shamanic work, which I, you know, followed that calling, and then it led me to certain things. Yeah. Keep on forgetting what I'm talking about. I think it's
No, you're doing fine. I mean, there's so much to unpack. Now
yeah.
take us into your late teens and into your early 20s. Whereabouts in Australia were you, and what were you doing?
Well, I got kicked out of home at 16 years of age. It was just a really bad relationship with my mother. She wasn't maternal. She just despised my father and despised me being there. The cult broke up in 93, and I think they kind of transferred all their sort of animosity towards moi, being the only child of Alistair in the house. So she sent me to go live with an uncle that I'd never met before. So she sent me to go live with my uncle in Sydney from Perth, Western Australia. Yeah.
They're across the country.
Yeah. I was starting to reach out and write to him, but I didn't know him very well. And the relationship with her was just spiraling out of control. And I was just trying to find a way out, you know, as a rebellious teenager. So I'm rebelling and, you know, meeting up with, you know, boys and whatever. But like, there was no support from them. They were just kind of letting me do whatever. And I was running away. I was trying to hitchhike out of town. Get me out of here. Pulled over by the police, running away from the police, jumping fences. Crazy, just trying to get out of my town, I think, and just realizing it was all going pear-shaped. So she went to send me to live with an uncle. My uncle didn't know anything about me. Again, like scapegoated by my uncle because of my mother's stuff. It doesn't matter where you go, you're going to get scapegoated. And even with my grandparents, it was just like so much unhealed trauma that my mother had left. Like she had disappeared for 15 years, right? That's the background in my family. She had been missing for 15 years and she didn't tell them where she was because she'd joined the cult and then she'd gone to Western Australia and didn't have anything to do with them. So And then I'm going to see my uncle, who I don't even know. And then suddenly I'm just getting dumped with all this stuff, you know, because this unhealed trauma. So I go stay with him for about a couple of weeks, and then I run away from him. And then I get into the sort of refuge. I'm a, like a street, hanging out with street kids, you know, in Sydney at a really young age. I just think, God, my old, I wish I swooped in there and saved myself, you know. But like I was smart enough, I was like, look, I'm intelligent. I can get out of this situation. I know it's, I'll just use my mind after sleeping on the streets for a couple of days in Bondi Beach. You know, I'm like, what would a homeless person do? Ring Salvation Army. So I rang the salvos and they got me into a Taldamundi refuge, it was called, in Neutral Bay. And then that was an emergency accommodation. And then I went into like a refuge for girls for a couple of years. Yeah, and it was actually good being there because the social workers kind of deprogrammed me from being in a cult, like just validating what I'd been through, you know, and just saying, it's not you, it's them, you know. So that was actually really healing in a lot of ways.
You told them your story, basically.
Yeah, there's some documents out there with my story. I mean, I think a few different people from my extended family actually went through the system. How, there's definitely quite a few. Yeah.
Did this cult, excuse me, did this cult have a name?
It didn't have a name, and it's because he and then I realized he studied like Aleister Crowley and Satanism. And if you have a name for something, right, it's dangerous because if you have a
Yes.
name, it can disintegrate. So everyone knows. I mean, I've seen the media try and say things like it was known as the quote unquote seaside cult, but it was never called that. I think they just tried to make a name for it to
Yeah, they do that.
stick.
Yeah, they do that.
This is really bizarre. So if anything, it was pretty much. You know, I know there's another cult called the Children of the Universe, but it was something similar to that, but we never named it. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's just everyone knows it as Alistair's cult or Alistair Leishkohov's cult. Yeah.
Whatever became of your father?
Oh, he passed away in 2015. He got done for pedophilia, did 8 years in a jail in Sydney, and yeah, he was deported to New Zealand after that, where he died in the North Island. Yeah, so he went back to some family members in the North Island of New Zealand. Yeah.
One of my friends and colleagues, Anna Page, you might have read her some of her papers she's been putting out lately. She's been putting out a stream of great writing, but she pointed out, and my colleagues and I have talked about this, is that sometimes when people become traumatized, through no fault of their own, they become almost a
Sorry, lagging. I can't see you. So, what was the last part? Yeah.
Well, what happens sometimes when people get traumatized, it's a working hypothesis, but I think there's
Yeah.
something to this, that they become something of an organic portal, to use Tom Montauk's term, that
Yeah.
something about being traumatized opens them up to, like, phenomena, for lack of a better term,
Yeah.
for, malign spiritual interference.
Yeah.
Well, what are your thoughts on that? Considering what you've gone through, and your ability, your second sight. So you
Yeah.
could probably see these marauding spirits, whereas others couldn't.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, when you're violated at the age of 3 or 4, it's a boundary thing, you know. Your psychic, spiritual, physical, mental, you know, boundaries have been violated. So once you don't have that energetic boundary, you're able to sort of, things can come in and out. I've always felt like I had like a weak skin when I was young, my boundaries. And in a cult too, you're kind of like a big amoeba. You know, you all have one will. You're all like working like a hive mind together. You know, there's that codependency stuff there too, which I've been working many, many years to undo. But yeah, absolutely. And I understand that I get paranormal phenomena and, you know, I can have like, I've had it all my life. I can hear a fan or an air conditioner, but it acts like a spirit box, and I can hear the spirits talking through it. You
Really?
know? Yeah.
Almost like the oscillating motion
Yeah.
tickles the ether in some way, not
Yeah.
just tickles the atmosphere, but the ether, and kind of allows a bleed-through effect.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, and like other psychics, like you'll affect the light bulbs. I've had light bulbs explode. I have light phenomena that goes on. Even I was on Typical Skeptic and Robert's show the other day, so I do oracle readings there, and he had the light was turned off above him, and the light turned on without anyone turning it on. He goes, "What the hell, the light?" And I said, "Well, you know, Robert, you should get used to that. I'm here. You know, I'm going to affect the machinery." And I don't really know why and how that works. I suppose it's because, you know, my energy is connecting to his energy over the other side of the planet, and we've got that stream going on. And I think it affects the bulb. It affects the technology. I don't, yeah.
Amped up the energy or the chi or something. I'd ask you to do a reading on me, but I'd be too embarrassed as far as what came up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know. Not really here for that. I always warn actually people that go, "Hey, do a reading." I'm like, you don't want it public.
Yes, no, it's perish the thought. I wouldn't do it
It's way
public.
too, you know, I'm going to go to the crux of the origin of trauma,
Yeah.
and you know, I do when I do oracle readings, it's a bit more lighthearted, but I'm definitely like all people need, all I need actually is like a Facebook name, or even if your name was XRTT, it doesn't matter, as long as I can just, once I've got that, bang, I've got the connection, and then I can work with anyone all over the world, you know, and yeah. So I don't need like a, yeah.
Well, I'm not familiar with the terminology. By oracle, do you mean cards, or is that a certain modality, or?
Yeah, so Oracle's like Oracle Reader. So you're reading cards. I don't really, to be honest, I don't really need the cards. The
Yeah.
cards are just for the people in front of me.
Yeah.
Sometimes the cards will give me pictures that kind of amplify or add to what I'm saying. So it's just like having a line. Your energetic line is connected. Once we understand that everyone and everything is connected, that's how I can work with people. I can work with
Yeah.
people like, they give me an address of a property, and I can clear that via distance. So, which humans are capable of. I'm all about psionics, and you know how we don't really know what we're capable of, you know.
I agree. I believe that we're capable of far more than
Yeah.
we're led to believe, that we've been not only have our lifespans been truncated, but our metaphysical capabilities have been reduced deliberately.
Yeah, absolutely. Limitations. And it's just through programming and thought control, and you know, even the term, like, it's just your imagination, and like belittling the most super powerful thing, like your creative co-creator imaginary abilities, you know, just being reduced to like, it's just your imagination. I remember seeing a ghost at school and telling someone, and they were like, "Oh, you're such an overactive imagination." It's like, no, I now know that I was correct. And I was just telling people what I was seeing, but I was seen as weird. So I was bullied a bit at school. I don't know what I was telling people as a child, but they would just say to me, like, "You say weird things. We don't want to hang out with you." You know,
Oh,
sad little kid. I was
no.
bullied at school and high school, but it's also a hangover from, like, you know, being the black sheep in cults. You've sort of got a mark on your field. You know, that you're a bit
Might as well
different.
be a big red letter, a scarlet letter or something, you know.
Yeah.
Tell us about your dream life, because a lot of people that are highly intuitive, they have quite an active dream life. It's like they shut down their normal waking consciousness and they just slip into these other dimensions and other realms when they're
Yeah.
asleep. What was yours like?
It comes and goes. Well, lately, like, I go to sleep. That's what they always say, like, you know, just sleep on it, right? And if something happens in my dream world, in the morning I'll have the answers. I'm like, oh, thank God, you know, or I'm going to be doing this. So I'll get advice. I'm have over the years, like, I remember I go to a school when I dream, and before I started doing my shamanic work in 2021, I remember nightly going to a school and learning these abilities, maybe relearning them, who knows? And then just being able to do them, like going, I think I can do this, and actually starting to run my sessions, you know. So yeah. And I have had dreams where, I know it's going to sound really strange, but like I was in the Adriatic Sea with Princess Diana. And this is when all the refugees were like going on ferries, going over to Italy and getting lost in the sea. Like the children and families were just drowning. So I was in a really dark ocean, and there was Princess Diana, me, and someone else, and we were helping the children into onto the light, like out of the ocean and into the light. I woke up remembering that very vividly. So I've been like a sort of like a angelic person when I'm in my dream state, and I'm helping people who have passed on into the light. Yeah, so there's another example of I helped a lady who was a middle-aged woman. She died on a ski lift in Europe somewhere, and I remember just talking to her soul and helping her onto the light. Interesting, right? So yeah, been doing that sort of, what do they call those people? There's a term for it.
Clairvoyance.
Oh well, yeah, I mean that's what I do. I'm a ghost clearer. I help ghosts onto the
Ghost
light.
whisperers.
Yeah, ghost whisperer. There's another term. Doesn't matter. It's gone out of my head. But yeah, there's a whole term for it.
I remember that time period. That would have been like mid late 90s, early 2000s. They had fragmented Yugoslavia and were bombing Serbia incessantly, and so it created this refugee crisis, people wanting to get away from all the killing and all the slaughter.
Yeah, so who knows? But yeah, I think I do that sort of work. Yeah, like a death doula or a Valkyrie is the word that's coming to me. Like, yeah, so helping people into the light. I mean, I did that for like a good 5 years in my business as a ghost clearer. But I started like I'd go to people's houses and then clear the houses of ghosts, but then I realized I could just do it via distance. But the programming with people is like, what, you can clear my house via distance, a ghost? Of course I can, you know.
It's because time and space doesn't matter.
Exactly, right? But a lot of the conditioning of our society says that there's no, you can't do that, it's not possible. You know, and I'm like, I've cleared houses from here to the US, Europe, Melbourne, Australia, you know. So, yeah.
When you tune into a home, are you tuning in or being drawn to some kind of energetic signature, like a portal or a consciousness? Take us through that process.
Well, I just put the address down, and I don't really prepare. I just get a bit of paper and I write the address down. If I need to sort of feel like I need to connect more, I might get the name and the date of birth of the person who occupies the house. But usually I just need an address. And then as I suppose you call it remote viewing. I just get pictures or images of like certain strong sort of energies of the house. Like I feel like it's my spirit goes there. I'll see the front of the house. It might be like a green gate. You know, defining features of certain houses, right? And I'll say it's white and it's got green and it's, you know, it's got this grass in the front and, you know, and there would be like, is anything? And then I'll ask myself, is there anything here to clear? And they'd be like, no, we're just going to give you defining features. And then I'll go into the house, I'll go down the hallway and I might see an old fireplace. And then I might go back in time. It depends on what is needed for the house. So it's like highest priority of the house. I'll go into a scene in the past, right? So I'm getting this picture now of like people dressed in like 1890 outfits, you know, long dresses and around the, you know, the fire. Maybe there's a piano there, you know. And I'll talk about the whole scene, right? Because the house and or even the person will give me what is needed to clear. Like they'll give me a story of what happened in that house. Like I might see 1890, and then I'll go to the future, and it might be like boys going to war. There might be some boys that have been sent to the First World War, and that's stuck energetically in the house. And then I'm sort of working with the spirit world too, going, do we need to clear this? And I'll be talking back and forth if there's a spirit in the house that's stuck. So maybe there's a young man from the, I don't know why I'm getting these particular images. Go with that. It was just sort of coming into my mind. But the First World War, and like this man is stuck there or stuck in the area, right? He's stuck in the house because of trauma, because of PTSD. And then I'll get the story of what happened in the war and why. And this all these stories come out. So then I'll write down the story of that. Say it was an example of a young man during the First World War who, you know, he's stuck, right? Because of the PTSD and stuff. I'll write it down, and then I'll go through a healing process with that man. And I'll be talking to him, like dialoguing with him, and saying, you know, why are you stuck? Why haven't you gone to the light? And he'll say, oh, because I can't forgive myself. I don't know why I did this. I'm really angry and I couldn't deal with it. I was a burden on my mother and I had to take pills and pass away, you know, just an example. Right? For some reason, that's getting given to me as an example by spirit. They're going, give him this example. This is going to be the best
Well,
example.
in that example, and I'm sure that I don't know if it's typical or atypical of the casework you've done, but typically, would it mean perhaps that that soldier had lived in that house at some point? What would be the connection with the house?
Well, it might be the land or the house. If the house has been around for 100 years, 120 years, that man most likely has been in that house. I've actually done clearings where the house is no longer there. It's been bulldozed, but the spirit is still there in their reality and their dimension, right?
Would appear as their house back then
Yeah, it
in
appears as
whatever
their
realm
house
that
back
they're in.
then. Yeah, I've definitely done a few of those houses. Very interesting.
I can understand. I mean, never having been in combat in this life and different forms of combat, but not combat, but I can imagine if someone, especially in something as horrific as the First World War, all the trench warfare and the incessant bombardments, what have you. There's no place like home. I mean, if you had a choice of, being in like living a troglodytic life in trenches, mud, rain, unburied bodies all over the place, I'd be wishing I was home. So if that person passed away in our example, got killed on the Western Front, let's say, yes, it makes sense that his spirit would be guided to go back to what he was familiar with. Well, in the time we got left in this first segment, do you want to mention anything as we segue into the member segment? And you can really cut loose in the member segment if you feel so inclined.
I know, the cat's made its way out the door. It's got to
Okay.
close the door. Be back in a second. Oh, the animal world, hey? When I start talking like this, they like the energy. Like when I do
They do.
sessions with, yeah, they do. Like it's happened a few times. Even when I'm talking about this subject matter, the cats. Telepathy is what I decided to do on my channel. I won't go into it too much. Maybe we'll go in the members section. And so I started a channel just to, because I didn't want to go and do, I did one ghost clearing and then one soul sessions, but I found it like too personal. And I worried about publicly putting things out that
Yes.
may give away people's kind of locations or so much detailed and information, you know, publicly, that I was worried about the ethics of that. So I thought, okay, well, how else can I show the public that I can do this? Maybe I'll just telepathically talk about, I don't know, the energies of what's going on at the moment. And yeah, so then I connected to beings from the Cosmic Collective, they called themselves. And I'd telepath on my channel weekly on my channel called Whimsical Wednesdays with Chloe Ariel.
Well, when you were doing that in the past, interacting, having this communication going on with these non-human intelligences, isn't that when you started getting interference and what have you?
Yeah, I did. Unfortunately, I got on some radar.
I
And
can imagine.
I got visitations from letter agencies, and it was just chaos.
Well,
Total
maybe if
chaos.
you feel so inclined, you don't have to. If you feel so inclined, you can elaborate on that in the second half. Could you tell our listeners and viewers how they can find you and your work online?
So I'm on Facebook as Chloe Ariel with two L's. And I have started a YouTube channel again, Whimsical Wednesdays with Chloe Ariel. So I'm restarting that up again. I don't think I'm successfully able to do lives because I was mostly doing lives before, but I'm putting videos up and starting to interview people. So, it's pretty good.
Well, I'd love to be on your show as a guest. Hint, hint. So if you ever feel so inclined, and to our dear listeners and viewers out there, we've been getting a lot of shadow banning, and the algorithms are driving people away from this channel and this content. So if you feel so inclined, you'd be doing us a great big favor. Please click like and subscribe and pass on our content on the Cosmic Switchboard Show to your various social media platforms. And for our members, we'll see you at the top of the next segment.